you're now experiencing the AJ Nashville Podcast. Real people, real problems, real success stories.
Hey guys, Alex here, AJNashville.com. Here with my friend today, Mr. Chris Robinette.
Thank you so much for coming, buddy. Yeah, no worries. Thanks so much for inviting me. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Always. So we have some questions here. Obviously, we went through a focus group. There's some questions here that people want answers to. We asked people online for different questions they had. So we've got some pre-written questions, but I want to kind of go through them and get your answers to them.
Yeah, no, definitely, man. I appreciate it.
So one of them, obviously, we know what your name is, so there's no sense in asking that again. But what is it that you do for a living? What's your actual title?
Yeah, so my actual job or, you know, profession that I do is a fee-based financial planner. Awesome. Here in Brentwood, Tennessee, over in Maryland Farms.
I was going to say, you said here in, but we're in Springfield, so yeah. We're a little down the road.
But middle Tennessee. It's all the same, right?
Right, right. So how long have you been doing that? Is that new to you? Have you been doing it for a long time?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of feels like a long time. You know, I moved to Nashville in August of 2011, coming out of the Navy, and started this job right away. So, you know, I guess we'll be clipping right about 7 years in August.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, you've been here 7 years.
Yeah.
And I feel like you know everybody.
It feels like I've been here my whole life, actually.
Right. Well, that Tennessee will do that to you. But yeah. I literally feel like you know everybody. I jump on a Facebook or something, and I'll see somebody that I've known for a long time, and they're responding in one of your questions. Yeah. Or, you know, I'll see somebody interacting that I'm like, wow, how does he know that person? How do you know so many people?
Dude, I don't know. It's, you know, I've always been, you know, a huge extrovert, which is hilarious because, like, if you look at what I used to do in the Navy, I used to be a nuclear engineer, wow. Right? So, my claim to fame was building number 2 reactor for the George H.W. Bush aircraft carrier, right? So, you know, nuclear engineers, we're a lot more of a, I don't know how you say it, introverts, and we like to do checklists and not talk to people. So,
right.
I mean, I realized that job wasn't going to last, and definitely a civilian transition wouldn't do it. But,
yeah.
You know, I've always liked people. I've always liked finding ways to help other people and kind of carry through. You know, it's kind of been my mission to make sure other people are taken care of. So, you know, when I go to networking events, I look for people that maybe feel out of place or a little shy or this, that, and the other. I want to go talk to them and have them, you know, be a friend and show
make them
that
feel comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, like you and I talked about at some events that we've been to, is you can kind of see the guys that don't know how to go meet somebody properly or how to take somebody. So you and I have both done a great job, I think, of, you know, taking them under our wings and introducing them to some folks you think are going to help them with business. And I think the more I've been able to introduce other people and create value for their business with no concern about what I do and how I do it, it's helped me gain a lot better friendships and a lot better relationships in town. And it just kind of snowballs, I guess, snowballs from there, you know?
Well, and I think those relationships are more genuine because you're actually looking out for the well-being of the people. And that's what makes you so good at what it is that you do, is it's a genuine concern for people and their success.
Exactly, yes.
Now you jump to the next question, which I'm glad you covered it, but a nuclear engineer in the United States Navy, like, that's some big stuff there. How long did you do that for?
So I was in the Navy for a little over 11 years. My first 4 years was at the Naval Academy.
Right.
So getting college degree and everything like that.
Gotcha.
And then, you know, moved off to the fleet, drove warships out of Hawaii for a couple of years. Then went and got my nuclear engineering degree out in South Carolina. And, yeah, like I said, I built the Bush aircraft carrier up in Norfolk. So it's pretty awesome to pre-com it. And then when you're commissioning an aircraft carrier, every living president shows up. So I actually have it. I'll probably never find the photo again because it was before we really took photos with our phones. But I got a great photo with 41 standing in the aircraft hangar with him and 43 with his big bronze statue that we have in there. That is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's cool to be able to see things like that.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you definitely – that's a story in itself to tell. That's almost like a whole separate podcast because it's so interesting when you actually break it down. And I've seen some pictures – that you have on Facebook from back in your naval years and everything else. And
back when I was skinnier.
Well, and you could see, but that's all of us. If you go like pre-2014 of my pictures, you're like, wow, that's a really good looking guy. Now you're like, hey, that's a guy.
It's because you had kids.
Exactly. Kids will do that. That's a perfect send-off. I love it.
You're living on fries and chicken nuggets now, buddy.
Right, exactly. And they're not even good fries or chicken nuggets. They're just kind of whatever you can eat that the kids will allow you to eat.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's interesting in itself. And you can look at those pictures and you can tell it was a different time for you. It was obviously a great time. It's a great learning experience. Obviously, I want to do what everybody that I'm sure that's listening to this wants to do, and that's thank you for your service. That means a lot to all of us.
Appreciate it.
One crazy thing is, you know, your dad, he's got the dental place, Dental by Design.
Yeah.
Incredible place. I had them do some cleaning and some work for me, and obviously he's very patriotic, and I assume some of that comes from you being in the service. He's got the statue holding the flag and everything down there, and it's kind of funny when you know.
Well, and he was in the Air Force.
Okay. Well, that makes even more sense. So he never said that.
He was in the Air Force for 10 years as a dentist.
Okay.
He was actually back in the Cold War. He was in Belgium and then Spangallam Air Force Base in Germany, running dental clinics out there.
That's crazy.
He rode some you call them Rios, where you're the rear seat rider in some Phantom F4s and stuff like that. So he rode some Rio seats for patrol missions out there with some of the guys he knew in the air wings and stuff.
So. Dude, that's so awesome.
He's got some pretty interesting stories, too. Don't let him fool you. He just doesn't talk about it.
No, trust me. When I saw him, I'm like, that's definitely Chris's dad. Looks just like him. But I'm going to have to see if I can drag him up here. Maybe I can sedate him with one of his gases or something. Get him up here.
IV sedation. He can just roll it right up here with him.
Roll it in a cart. There you go. So it's small world, though, that we ended up. You and I were friends before I moved to this location. Mm-hmm. It's small world that I ended up in the same exact building that he was in.
Yeah.
So now let me ask you this, and I know this is kind of a difficult question, but what was your biggest takeaway from serving and how have you applied that to your civilian life? I know that's kind of weird, and it's one of those questions that, you know, service life is obviously a little bit separate than civilian life, but at the end of the day, it's kind of, there's similarities there. You eat when it's time to eat.
Yeah.
You go to bed when it's time to go to bed.
If you can go to bed. Yeah.
Exactly. So what were your biggest takeaways from the lessons, obviously being on a ship and everything else?
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of hard when you look at that a little bit on, you know, takeaways and stuff. And I've found that it's probably easier when you have, you know, like a creed or a motto or something that applies to you and what you find, you know, kind of signifies and delineates what your life really is. And what I found in the Navy, and I've kind of been able to carry over to civilian life and, you know, my job and everything like that, is there's really two mottos that I've fallen back on that really remind me of everything. And the first one I actually have inscribed inside my Naval Academy ring, and it's "Officers Eat Last." And what that really means is, you know, back in World War II, they were pushing so hard across the Eastern Front, and the officers are sitting in the tents, and they're eating all their meals and this, that, and the other, and they're not understanding, you know, the general premise on why the troops aren't keeping up and what's going on. And what they realized is they were all getting fed, and then the troops had all their own other rations, and they didn't actually have enough food and rations for the enlisted guys that were there.
Right.
So they all had full of energy. They had their, you know, their calorie intake and everything else like that.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, one of the generals, I mean, in the basic sense, was like, hey, no, feed us in a little bit. We're working on these battle plans. Go feed everybody else.
Right.
And then they came back to eat, and they're like, we don't have any food. They're like, what do you mean we don't have any food? And that was the first time they realized we didn't have enough food on the supply trains. We weren't pushing enough up. They didn't understand it. So, you know, it's one of those, you know, Army and Marine Corps are great at doing it. You know, always take care of the enlisted guys first. Always take care of the most junior guy first. And then what it really resolves down to is if I'm not being taken care of, then that means someone else isn't being taken care of.
Right.
So if I'm the last one to sit down in a room, then I know everybody else has a chair. If I'm the last one to eat at a buffet line, like, you know, like a chamber event or, you know, happy hour someone's throwing or whatever. And if I don't get any food, then that means there wasn't enough for everybody else. And that's okay.
Right.
You know, I can go take care of myself later. But by putting others first, by putting the mission first and then taking care of yourself, you know, you live by, you know, the platinum rule, as I call it, is always take care of others before you take care of themselves, and always treat others like they want to be treated, not just like how you think they want to be treated. So it's a little harder. And the other one that kind of comes alongside of that is my other motto is a rising tide lifts all ships. So, you know, Zig Ziglar says it all the time. If you want to get rich, make other people rich too.
Yes.
So it's a lot of the same mentality of in the Navy with ship, shipmate, self. So as I take care of others, others will take care of me. It's just natural laws of reciprocity. And that's kind of how we were in the fleet too. So, you know, as long as you're always taking care of everyone else, you're going to be taken care of.
Yeah.
And the rising tide really does lift all ships. If you're lifting everybody up, you're getting them to a better platform, you're getting them to a better state, they're going to sit right there and put a hand out and lift you right up with them. So
agree. And that's it's a crazy concept that I think a lot of people don't get. You have a lot of people out there that like to consider themselves leaders, but they're not. And they're not leaders because they don't do some of the things that you're talking about. Now, I recently heard a story, read a book, or something of that nature. I try to involve myself with so much that it's hard to know where I got it from. But it's exactly what you're talking about, where the troops, they're out there, they're starving. These officers say, hey, you know what? We're going to feed these troops first. Well, what they found is, just like you said, the rising tide, they found that their troops started saving them small rations of food so they can eat as well. Mm-hmm. It's crazy when you see that, hey, these people are now taking care of these other people, but those people are going to turn around and take care of them as well.
And it brings, you know, and you translate it to civilian life. I mean, it brings stronger community to who you have. And it really strengthens a bond and a friendship with someone else when you can get to a place where you're helping them get clarity on what they're doing. You get them out of the confusion of where they may be in life or business or anything else and help them see a path and create clarity. But, you know, also at the same time, that clarity leads to a better vision and a better mission that they're on. And then they want to, like I said, reciprocity. They want to help you do the exact same thing.
The success.
So it becomes a lot better. And then doing that, I mean, you literally build advocates. I mean, you build people that want to talk about you. You build people that want to tell others about what you're doing because they want those people to get helped by you as well.
Right.
Because they know how much you help them, and they can see the value that you bring to them, even if it's not directly business related. You know, it's life related.
And that's huge. Having advocates, you know, you nailed it there. That's one of the most important things. When you have people that genuinely want to see you succeed because you've helped them along the way, that's the best word of mouth. You know, you always hear word of mouth is word of mouth. People talking about you, whether it's good or bad, is always the best. But in actuality, when you have people that truly stand for what it is you believe in, that's a whole different word of mouth. You know, that takes you from, hey, I want to do business with you, to, hey, I want to get to know more about you, plus give you my business, plus give you the business of everyone else that I know. So let me ask you this. What made you want to join the service? Was it fresh out of high school? You're like, I got to do something with my life. Or what was it that made you want to join the service?
Did you ever watch the movie Top Gun?
Did I ever watch the movie? I love that movie. That's one of my most favorite movies in the world. I literally have sat in a restaurant and acted out a portion of that movie. It was 3 a.m., but we did that.
It's not the sole purpose behind it. But, you know, I grew up in Oklahoma City. We love Top Gun. Top Gun was all Navy. And my mom, who was a dentist out in Oklahoma, had a staff member whose husband was actually the Commodore for the Naval Air Wing at Tinker Air Force Base in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were talking about where do you want to go to college. And, you know, I had 12 full rides to different schools. And I was debating Florida State or Oklahoma because they both were amazing at college football. And I wanted to watch good college football. And so let's just be honest.
Right.
And he came up and asked me, he's like, well, have you considered the Naval Academy? And I was like, never thought about it. And he's like, well, you have 4 days to apply. Or you're not getting in. I was like, oh. So, you know, I saw the simulators. I saw the stuff they were doing. I realized that this is really cool. And, you know, I did what's called Boy State, which is where you leave your junior year of high school and you take a week with the American Legion. And every state has it. And you really sit with veterans in the American Legion and stuff like that. And you really learn about government and giving back and, you know, putting others in front of you. And, you know, when I came back from that, I hung out with a West Point. He was a junior, a rising junior going to West Point for the whole week. He was like our squad leader guy. And, you know, he just really inspired my life to realize there's a lot more to it than just being a lifeguard at the YMCA and then working at the city pool every summer and then just going to college and having fun. So, you know, then do that with Captain Kilty on top of it, really motivating me. And I was like, man, I really want to give back. And we haven't had any family that was in the Navy. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, Navy sounds great. I love water. So, you know, we kind of went that way. And, you know, I went to the Naval Academy and I was in my honors capstone program, you know, my senior year. And I was just so burned out on school, and flight school was another 2.5 years. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. So I literally changed my senior year and asked to go surface warfare to be, you know, on warships and directly in the fleet and start leading troops.
That's awesome.
And that's when my company officer at the Naval Academy was like, well, do you think you can pass the nuclear exam? I was like, heck yeah. Took me 3 tries, but I passed it. And so that's where I kind of went and just changed my whole career. And, I loved it.
Yeah. So when you got out of the Navy, what were you? What rank?
I was a lieutenant.
Okay.
So 03.
So what do they consider, what do they call that? A butter bar?
No, that's the ensigns. Those are like boots. So, those are like brand new guys.
Gotcha. Okay, so I know there's nickname terms for that, like colonels, they call them full birds, you know. Yeah. Me being a civilian, I don't have that. I have more of the enlisted terminology now.
Yeah.
It's the officers where I struggle, so.
I'm with you.
Did you have a nickname in the Navy?
I did. I actually had two. So my first ship was the USS Chosin out of Pearl. So, you know, you leave the coast of Hawaii and 50 miles and you're not seeing any land and you're out in the middle of the Pacific. So I actually picked it up because I did a lot of night watches when we first got started, and you would spot stuff on the ocean and you'd be like, oh, there's a ship. And everybody's like, where? Oh, yeah. It's on radar, but we can't see it. And I was like, I see it. It's right there. So the captain was joking with me. He's like, what are you, Batman or something? And so it stuck. So my whole first ship, I was Batman.
That's awesome.
And then when I went to the bush, you know, bush, we have pilots all over the place and we're launching aircraft and we have all the other stuff. So everybody gets a call sign.
Right.
And, you know, my name being Chris Robinette or Christopher Robin, they were talking Winnie the Pooh stuff.
But right.
And then one day this guy's like, hey, C. Robin, what are you doing? And he was like, oh, that's what we're going to call you, C. Robin. But instead of C, it was S-E-A, like the ocean.
Right.
And then Robin, like I was stealing stuff, R-O-B-B-I-N. And so the first patch that I got on the aircraft carrier was S-E-A, R-O-B-B-I-N.
That's
so
awesome.
It's kind of funny how they just, a little play on words with my name.
Yeah. No, and that works. So does that still stick with you today, or is that something that's kind of long or forgotten?
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of people still call me C. Robin. You don't know how they're spelling it. So it could be, you know, C-R-O-B-I-N. It could be S-E-A-R-O-B-V-I-N.
Right.
You never really know, but that one stuck way more than the Batman one did. So. Yeah.
Well, and Batman and Robin, it kind of, it's hand in hand.
Yeah, it was kind of a play on words. Exactly. Yeah.
It's awesome. So, and here's a difficult question. This is difficult for anybody. I know you've thought about this, but if you could tell your younger self something, what would it be?
How young are we going? So
2 years old.
Start walking already, son. Right. You know, I'd say the first thing is I probably should put more money in retirement when I started. And I say that because now I'm a financial planner, so put money in retirement.
Right.
But no, I mean, I spent a lot of money on beer and alcohol because I was in the Navy and we'd go out every weekend and have fun.
Goes hand in hand.
And I probably could have cut back a couple $100 a month and saved it, and it probably would have helped me more. Family, personally related, if I could go back, I'd probably tell my mom to fix her trust and make sure everything's actually titled properly and done, you know, correctly, and not have to go through probate before she died, because that probably would have helped my sister and I out tremendously. And then just like something dumb and funny, I would say, you know, you should have sent me back before the iPhone was created and told me to buy as much Apple stock as I could afford, because I'd probably be retired right now on a beach not doing this podcast.
I was going to say, it'd be hard to get you on, because where do you find multi-billionaires at that point? So, but, it, you know, hindsight's 20/20 always.
Story of life, man.
But investing, you know, that's one thing I found through the years, that if you don't invest, then you'll find yourself, you know, with the housing crash that we had. Everyone's making great money, but what was everybody not doing? Yeah. Nobody was saving the money.
Diversifying out. You got to diversify.
Exactly. So you see people that are making $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a month. Mm-hmm. I want to push that point.
Yeah.
That ended up 2 years out of the housing crash with zero.
Yeah.
You know, so
it happens. You got to diversify. I mean,
exactly.
It's hard when, you know, you're flipping homes, like take realtors, for example, you're flipping homes and you're selling stuff and you're making 30, 40% ROI. It's hard to turn around and look at saying, hey, I should invest for 8%, or I should put money in my emergency fund for 1% in a checking account. You know, it's hard to want to justify that, but you're right. It's, you gotta mitigate the risk somehow.
Or even worse, hey, this is eventually going to come to an end, you know? So let me ask you this. You've had an interesting past. I love the story, you know, being in the Navy, everything else. What in your past helped you prepare and plan for your future?
So, our plebe year at the Naval Academy, you know, it's, that's what they call freshmen. You don't deserve to be called a freshman, so you're just a plebe. You know, our plebe year, they really drilled in this concept called Messages to Garcia. And the whole point of Messages to Garcia was, this guy had to get a message to Garcia. He didn't know where on the island Garcia was. It didn't matter where he was. Garcia had to have this thing. The army captain looked at this guy and said, get this message to Garcia. And the guy said, sir, yes, sir. And he just left.
Right.
He didn't say, hey, well, what hill is Garcia on? Hey, do you got GPS on how to get me over there? Like, would I get shot at along the way? He just went and did it.
Yeah.
So the premise behind that really is, you know, something needs to happen and there's not always going to be someone there to help you and kind of how to get it done or to babysit you on the tasks that really need to be completed. And, you know, I think that helped me the most in my transition, because I came in a job that effectively had me become a small business owner overnight, earning my own pay. And there wasn't someone there to hold my hand every day, giving me business and making me money.
Right.
You know, and also when I was in the military, when I was building the George H.W. Bush aircraft carrier, like I said, I mean, there was weeks in the testing phase we'd basically live on the ship, mm-hmm. pulling 100 to 120 hour work weeks to get testing done in time.
Jesus.
And yeah, it's crazy, but I've never had a 9-to-5 in the Navy. I mean, right. you would work during the night, you'd work during the morning, like you would just work whenever the work needed to get done. So I never served a 40 hour work week. So I felt like I was ready for long work days and putting in long hours when I made the transition. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the few things that really helped me out the most, actually, because I wasn't afraid to work until 6 o'clock and then go networking from 6 to 9,
right,
and come home late and tired, but meet 10 other people that I wasn't going to meet trying to get them on the phone that day.
Right. Well, and that's the big thing. So when we talk about people in the service, men and women that serve, they don't have necessarily set hours, especially when you're deployed or you're not, you know, here in the U.S. So those of us that complain, hey, you know what, in order to get my business going, I had to work 50, 60 hours a week. That's nothing in comparison to what other people are putting in, not just you, but other people out there right now serving.
And I think that's what helps veterans the most when they do transition. They're used to hard work and not a lot of pay and crummy conditions sometimes.
Right.
So they're the ones most likely to appreciate anything you're offering them.
And I think it's proof that with hard work, you can achieve it.
Yeah.
If you can dream it, if you can work it, you can achieve it. And that just reiterates that. Now, in the Navy, it didn't matter. You were going to put in that time, whether it was something that you were going to achieve for yourself or not, but you're achieving a common mission.
Exactly.
And that's keeping America safe. Now, is there anything else that you would like to share with the listeners? Now, we got some Q&A that's coming after this that came from people on Facebook this morning, but do you have anything else you want to share with the listeners?
Yeah, like, you know, kind of like I said, you know, the transition from military to civilian life is never the easiest one out there. And, you know, I've loved the transition to my new career and you know, what I do now. And, man, let me just tell you, like, I've never had as much fun as I've had right now.
Right.
You know, the real reason is that now I'm allowed the opportunity to be an advocate for others and really educate them on why I believe legacy and estate planning are the most important things that they can do for their family. Yeah. You know, and my passion for that, you know, ensures, you know, it revolves around helping people to ensure that they're fully protected, you know, unlike my family really was when my mom passed away during 2005 when I was actually deployed to Iraq.
Wow.
So, you know, if I can do one thing to help one other person out and make sure their family's taken care of, even if they don't do business with me, I feel like I did my job.
Well, and you're very educational. You're not sales pitchy. You know, I've sat with a lot of different people in a lot of different industries that like to think the same thing that you try to deliver. And it's always, buy this, buy this, buy this, buy this, buy this. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the nice thing is knowing you from a personal level, but even prior to that, a professional level, you're a person that, hey, you know what? Here's what we can do to help protect you. Now, I'm going to ask you some questions that were posted online today. There's actually some really good ones on here. So Brandon Baca, he said, where did you get your light blue suit?
Oh, Brandon. We're going to talk about that one later. So my buddy John Browning created a company called Johnny Dapper. And, you know, we've been doing a lot of things with custom suits and stuff lately for what he's trying to do in a lifestyle brand for people. And, you know, he offered me a sweet deal to get a suit for Steeplechase. And, you know, Randall Sanderson is the guy that I actually work with on my suits and stuff like that. And, you know, they did a great job and I love it. And my light blue suit is, I think, cool.
It is. It's awesome. And it's that profile picture that everybody knows, you know, when you look at it. And I've talked to Randall before.
And Randall took that picture, which is even better. That's not even like Devin Williams photography. Right. That's just Randall with an iPhone.
Yeah, Devin Williams photography is hard to compete with, though. He's awesome at what he does. And that's another man I need to get on this podcast because he's got a story to tell as well. And Randall's a super nice guy. I've spoke to him before. I mean, they do everything from shoes, shirts, you name it. They build it. They have it. So
they actually even do what's funny is they were telling me they'll do a custom lining inside your jacket. You know, if you get a blazer suit or anything.
Right.
I mean, you want to put your kids' artwork in there. They'll do it.
Dude, that's awesome.
He showed me a picture of Starry Night from Van Gogh that someone had put inside their suit. I was like, that's cool.
Yeah.
Not for me, but that was really cool.
Yeah. It's still that custom look when you pop it open. You're like, what's that?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's pretty neat.
And we're running low on time here, but I'll breeze through these other questions.
Sure.
The what motivated you to start your company? I think we kind of answered that throughout the way. I think that's a good one.
Who was that from so we can credit?
Jake, my buddy Jake Cottrell. Awesome dude. He's got quite a few things going himself, so I'm sure that's why he asked that question. It helps motivate and move him. Now, Mike Ray asked, how can we get our kids investing with their own money?
Give them chores. and pay them for the chores and get them to start learning, you know, hard work and the value of a dollar.
Yeah.
You know, I have four kids, so at the time of this recording, so when we listen to this 10 years from now, you know, Jason just turned 10,
right.
Jess is 7, John is 9 months, and Justin is just turning 2.
Yeah.
So, you know, with Jason and Jessa, my older ones, you know, we do chores around the house. I give them an allowance when they're here for the summer and this, that, and the other. And I actually created the Bank of Dad, or the Robinette Family Bank, however you want to call it.
Right.
And I pay them 5%. On a daily compounding, 5% APR, of course. I'm not giving them 5% a day.
I was just thinking,
I give them 5% daily compounding to invest in the Bank of Dad.
Yeah.
And usually it's when they leave to go back home to their mom. They're like, here, Dad, here's our $28 we have or whatever.
Right.
And they come back and it's like 31 bucks or something like that. And they're like, wow, I can't believe it. So it kind of gets them seeing, you know, compound interest and how money's made and why you need to, you know, put your money away for later. Yes. And I track it all on an Excel spreadsheet because it's super basic and Excel will just run the math. But then my kid can look at it and he can literally extrapolate out 5 years from now. If I don't ever move any money, what do I have?
Right.
And then the next thing I'd say is as your kids grow up, as they start getting the jobs in high school, like I lifeguarded, taught swim lessons. So if your kids are lifeguarding, teaching swim lessons, you know, basically match whatever they want to put in a retirement account. You can open Roth IRAs and IRAs and all kinds of things for them, UTMAs, UGMAs, you know, everything out there under the sun.
Yeah.
They have to use their earned income, but it's super simple. You just, if your kid wants to put $100 in the account, just give your kid $100 back as cash.
Yeah.
You know, so now they're used to putting their money in and you're kind of taking all the risk away because you're giving them the money, but eventually you'll stop matching that money for them, and hopefully the value and the habit that they created of investing and saving in retirement stays.
Right, exactly. And that's the biggest thing is you're teaching them a lesson that they're going to carry with them for life. Mm-hmm. And when kids are young, teaching them those lessons is extremely important.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll move to the next question. Tim Smirka, how do you deal with stressful times we all face in life?
Yeah, so stress. So my job is 100% commission. So if someone doesn't buy something or someone doesn't do a financial plan, then I'm not getting paid.
You know?
There's no salary that comes into me because it is, you know, my job. So, you know, what I've found is, you know, if I can really take 30 to 45 minutes a day to myself, put my phone away, put the computers away, everything, and just get out a notepad and just kind of write down, hey, what worked, what didn't? All right, cool. What worked? How can I replicate that? How can I expand on it? How do I do this networking event again? How do I not do that networking event again?
Right.
That's the easy part. The hard part is what didn't work.
Yeah.
And literally admitting to yourself, hey, this didn't work. Do I keep beating my head against the wall or do I try to find a different way? And then creating action steps to get it to be either more effective or finding a way to hand that off to someone else as either a partner or a business associate or someone else you work with that may do better. And even if you got to split the money that would come from it, but it's taken care of right because you're focusing on their strengths and then you're focusing more on yours. I mean, that kind of helps reduce stress. And then, you know, other than that, I mean, I don't sleep a lot, so I've done a lot better now that I sleep a lot more. Mm-hmm. I've cut way back on my drinking, so that helps, you know, because when you go out networking, everybody's got a beer, everybody's got a Tito's soda with two limes and a tall glass, you know, things like that. So, you know, trying to be more cognizant of, hey, I know I'm going to be here for 3 hours, like, let's have just two or three,
and,
you know, not 10 because it's an open bar because you're at someone's party or something like that. So, I mean, a lot of things like that and just, you know, work out whenever you can, because when you have a bad day, working out, it always makes you feel better.
It does. And it sucks, but it makes you feel like literally getting that aggression and that disappointment.
Yeah.
It's almost like it leaves your body with each rep or, you know, and I just started going back to the gym and I did the same thing you did, which was cut back on drinking.
Yeah.
Which it's hard to do. And I know it sounds like an excuse, but in our industry where we're networking, going to open bars and things like that, and your buddy runs up and says, hey, let me buy you a shot. You know, well, you can't buy me a shot because it's an open bar, but still. But no, those are all great points.
You always find out who wants to get you around when they don't got to pay for it.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Everyone wants to pull you around. So now John Vanis, let me give a shout out to him. This is a true American patriot. He owns a company called Incendiary. They do a lot of great things. He wanted to know what was the biggest carryover from military life to business life and how can we as non-military learn from military team building. I think we really covered that. If there's anything you want to toss in there.
Yeah, I mean, Not really. I mean, I think you're right. I think we kind of nailed on that. You know, a lot of veterans know hard work. They understand what they're coming from, but they don't want to be coddled. They don't need someone to be like, hey, you were deployed. Are you okay? Like,
right.
It's like saying, hey, you went to the gym yesterday. Are you sore? I mean, yes. Obviously. Like, thanks.
Right. Ugh.
So, you know, I mean, everybody wants a fair shake in life. And I think, you know, we're veterans do a lot better at a lot of jobs, especially manual labor and things like that, and, you know, hard work, middle management positions, is they knew how to lead.
Yes.
And they knew how to follow. And
right.
They understood from a lot of different cultures, from a lot of different ships and stations and this, that, and the other, what was working to motivate people and what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, you know, that they have a lot bigger tool belt of things that they can use to positively affect people and also yes. negatively affect people on how not to do things.
Agreed.
Where a lot of people maybe just straight out of college that haven't had that, and maybe one or two jobs, you know, have only seen just a few things versus a handful of people constantly
mm-hmm.
trying to do stuff, if that makes any sense.
Now, obviously, you're a paid financial planner.
Yeah.
You're a fee-based financial planner. So I'm going to ask you a question,
mm-hmm.
and I'm hoping that you'll donate this question or do whatever it is you can do within
sure.
your bounds. Madeline Smallwood, this is my buddy. Actually, her husband is a branch manager for Hancock Mortgage.
Okay.
He is also a reservist.
Nice.
Really super cool guy. He's in the artillery. He sent some really cool pictures when he's deployed.
Yeah.
Or not when he's deployed. I'm sorry. When he's out doing trainings and stuff. And she wants to know, what's your number one top financial planning tip? And this is as loaded as they come, I'm sure. But
it sounds pretty loaded.
Yeah. Answer what you can and avoid what you can.
You know. So, I mean, to me, like, financial planning means a lot of different things to a lot of different people,
right.
obviously. Like,
right.
what's most important to you is not going to be most important to me. I mean, we talked about it beforehand. Like,
right.
you love your cars,
yeah.
and I could care less.
Right.
You know, so I'm yeah. not wanting to dump a lot of money in that. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you kind of look at it just from that situation, you know, I tell everybody, if you can divide your money up into thirds,
mm-hmm.
you're getting yourself at least in a situation where you can psychologically start figuring out how things are working, where they're at, what you're overspending in, what you're underspending in.
Right.
So if you put a third of your money to taxes and you put your third of your money to your lifestyle, that leaves a third of your money for dreams and goals.
Right.
You know, so those dreams and goals, that third could be paying down debt, funding an emergency fund, starting
right.
a retirement account, buying life insurance so you know your family's taken care of.
Right.
That's parts on your Jeep. That's setting your truck up 5 inches higher than normal.
Jeeps is a no-no word. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
You know, but I mean, that may be planning for a vacation, everything.
Yeah.
And then when you realize if you don't need a third for lifestyle, then you'll start kicking that money over to your goals and dreams and maybe doing things faster or slower that at a pace that you're comfortable with.
Right.
You know, and the same for taxes. Like if you don't need a third for taxes, most
yeah.
people, we find that we were used to saving that third. We got it out of our lifestyle. We weren't overspending.
Right.
So that now we're able to kick it to our goals and dreams. So maybe we're paying down on our mortgage a little bit more. Maybe
mm-hmm.
we're, you know, paying off that student loan or paying off our car for other things to free up other cash flow.
Right.
And, you know, I would say that the final thing is, you know, the person worth $1 million and the person worth $100 million both have the same problem, and
mm-hmm.
it's cash flow.
Right.
You know, cash flow is the biggest thing people worry about. So when you're looking at your planning, I mean, everybody says there's good debt, there's bad debt. You know, there's all kinds of arguments across the board on it. And
mm-hmm.
I would just tell you that, you know, the main thing to focus on is if you can focus on cash flow, the more positive cash flow you can create while minimizing your deficits
right.
is what's going to help you the most feel comfortable and get to that place of financial independence
mm-hmm.
sooner.
No, and that makes sense. And that's a great tip. And I think that's a great way to answer that question. So, unfortunately, we're a little bit over time. Those of you that listen to the regular podcast, you know that we've ran a little over than what we typically do. But I have to admit, I love this podcast. This was awesome. It's very
Thanks,
informative.
Buddy.
Great information. You have a voice like butter. It
yeah.
just kind of melts around the mic. So that's helpful as well.
I wish. I probably sound raspy and horrible, but that's okay.
It sounds good. I can hear it with, you know, I got these monitoring headphones on. They're kind of dorky looking,
yeah.
but it works.
Well, we're not filming this. So
right, exactly.
Matter, right?
And I need a haircut. So I'm about 2 weeks overdue of a haircut, but we won't talk about all that. But I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Chris, I want to give you an opportunity. There's a disclosure that you have to read.
Yeah.
Let me hear it.
So, like in all things in life, you know, as a financial planner, we have a lot of stuff. So, Just so you know, I am Chris Robinette, and I am a registered representative with MML Investor Services, LLC, a member of the SIPC of MML Investor Services, and they may not be affiliated with other named entities or individuals, and they do not endorse their opinions or the information that I provided in this here podcast. And I appreciate that, and I thank them for having the autonomy to do whatever I can in my job, you know, and keep me from ever getting in trouble.
So. Yeah, no, that's great. So how can I get in touch with you? Let's say I've got an opportunity I want to swing past your way, and I want to grow, and I want to do it with you. How do I reach out to you?
Yeah. So it's easy. My cell phone, 615-943-8020. And I have a Bitly, which is pretty easy to find me. It pulls you all my work information. So it's just Bitly, bit.ly/CROBIN. See, there's the C Robin,
there it
but not
is.
The call sign.
There it is.
But that'll take you straight to my work page. That'll get you my office address, my phone number, my email, everything else like that. So you can always find me. Check out what we're doing at Continuum Planning Partners. And if I can ever be of assistance to anybody, feel free to reach out.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, hey, thanks so much for taking time out of your day to come out. I know it's kind of easier for you because your dad's right downstairs, so you can kind of knock out two birds with one stone.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate the time you spent with us here today. Those of you that have questions or anything, please feel free to reach out to Chris directly or shoot us a private message. Those of you that think that somebody should listen to this, please tag them in it, share it, like it, help us promote this. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, let's take it viral.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go viral is crazy. So, but we always appreciate your support. We appreciate your time listening to this. Thanks again for tuning in, guys.
Thank you for tuning in to the AJ Nashville Podcast. Episodes air Mondays at 6 and Fridays at 5. Thank you for your ongoing support. Please subscribe.